A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away,
you're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
That's right, Whistler. Welcome to episode 276 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, your Star Wars discussion podcast, your podcast of legends, as well as canon, your ticket to that galaxy far, far away. For over a decade, our episodes have broadcasted across the Star Wars Report website, Second Airborne Division of Podcasts, at www.starwarsreport.com. Episodes can also be found on iTunes, as well as Stitcher, and even Spotify, and also right on our own Twitter and Facebook pages at SW Beyond Films. Hey, but enough about how you got here. Let's get this show started. I'm one of your hosts, the defender of the EU, the champion of the multiverse, the bipolar Star Wars fan, Mark Herleman. And with me, like the sensation we're being watched that can only come from the Force, the Doctor of Timelines and a Wookiee-sized Star Wars fan in his own right, our own Dr. Jim Lehane.
Good morning, good evening, good night. I don't know. What time is it? Wherever you
right?
are.
Right. Drop a note. Let us know. When are you listening? So how you doing, Jim? How's it been?
I'm doing all right. Work. A lot of work. Working on the house. Working on everything. Finished maple syrup season. Managed to produce about a little over a gallon of maple syrup just for my little enterprise in the backyard. So
nice. Now, are you keeping that just for family? Or are you actually selling some to friends?
It's not enough to sell.
Not enough. More than enough for you guys, though? Or is it just like just enough to get by where you're like, eh, it's a nice little treat?
It's probably, I don't know, like last year, I probably made like a quarter of this amount. So this is a lot more than last year. So we'll see how long it lasts us throughout the year. But yeah, it's fun being able to make your own maple syrup. It's I feel like I did something.
Right? You're crafty. Man, I had a heck of a week myself. I went down to the bank for work to get some ones. And on my way back, a teenager ran a stop sign. I couldn't stop broadside of their car. You know, it was a two-way stop for them. But, of course, it was one of the friends was teaching their friend to drive the car. It was, like, not an adult in the car at all. I'm like, oh, come on, guys. Like, so my car is, like, currently in the shop, and I'm waiting to find out exactly how bad the damage is because it shoved the bumper in pretty good. But, man, nobody got hurt, thankfully. But, yeah, it was just one of those, oh, man.
That's good.
Whole day came to a stop. Yeah,
that's I saw the pictures of the bumper. I didn't know you had commented that nobody was hurt, so that's good to know.
Yep.
That could have been bad. You and your stripper ones there. There's a pile of ones in their car.
Right.
Mark's like, this is from my work.
Well, what's funny too is like, I was telling my mom, I was like, you know, I doomed the car the second I put all the stickers on the window. And she goes, what do you mean? I'm like, I collect stickers like I collect everything, you know? And I'm like, I'm reluctant to ever put them on anything because like, I don't want whatever I put it on to get destroyed. Case in point, I had a Honda Civic that I put stickers on. Literally, like, the week I did it, wrecked the car, somebody broke out all the windows. So now I got all these stickers on the car, of course, like, it breaks, you know, I get it broke. I'm like, watch, I'll go in, and they'll be like, it's totaled, we can't fix it. Like, no, there's, like, $200 worth of freaking vinyl stickers on the back window. They literally just finally put on. Ah, yeah, first world problems, man.
Sticker problem.
Right?
Sticker shock?
Yeah, that is a new version of Sticker Shock for sure.
You got an award this week too.
Oh yeah, that's right. God, yeah, I totally forgot about it. So we had a Court of Honor back at the beginning of April. And for those that aren't really familiar with scouting, Court of Honor is the time of the year, depending on how many Courts of Honors you hold a year, where you celebrate the achievements that the scouts have done, right? It's a boy-led program, so the boys kind of set everything up. I did have one award that I knew I was going to be getting, and that was the Veterans Award. I've been in scouting as a scout and or volunteer or leader now for over 20 years. So I knew that award was coming because when I first put in for it, I was like 14 years and I was like, oh, I'll wait a year. And then I forgot about it for 6 years. So I'm like, oh, it's sweet. Because like every 5 years you can up it and you get a new pin and all this other stuff. But so I knew that was coming. So like everything gets over and, you know, they're like all the boys' awards are done. And they're like, hey, we got one more. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you know, this is that one. And I get that one. And they're like, we got another one. I'm like, oh. Okay, I wonder who this is for. And again, for me, our senior patrol leader and our charter, our committee chair had to write letters to our council. And I ended up getting the unit award of the unit leader award of merit, which is a special award. It gives with a special patch and all this other stuff. And then so after I get that, then I also get the scouter's key, the scouter trainer award. There's like four different awards that I got at the end. And I was just like, you guys going to spread this out a little bit? Like,
nope, at the very this end, is I'm it. Like, they, no, this is... they don't want to acknowledge you again for the next 10 years. Yeah. So this is
like at the very end, it's the Mark show. And I'm like, oh man, do we have a spotlight? I mean, we could have slid these in like between each thing. Like, But yeah, it was pretty cool. I had no idea that Johnny had to actually write a letter for me and stuff. Now I'm like, I really want to know what he said.
Like, do not give him this award.
Right? Right? I'm writing this under duress. I'm being forced. But yeah, it was pretty cool getting that honor and stuff. And now I'm like, I've got all these different little... they're knots that go above one spot of like over by your heart, kind of signifies the different awards you've got and stuff. Now I've got like six of them where before it was like, I had the one for when I got my Arrow of Light as a kid, a couple of the religious awards, things like that. But now I'm like, I've got so many that I'm like, man, maybe it's time to buy a new uniform and look crisp. And yeah, all my uniforms are so old. Like, dude, you put them on, the neck's like all rotted out from sweat from all the different service projects and stuff I've done where I'm like, yeah, I'll just wear my shirt.
Well, that's
time for an upgrade.
Well, that's a you aren't allowed to get a new shirt now. Once you get the old man, I've been here a long time award, you have to prove it.
Right, right. Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, between that and, you know, different things we've been doing, like, I became a range master for a tomahawk knife throwing range and stuff. So, we've been doing a couple different events and stuff at our local council chapter, our OA events and stuff. So, that's been kind of fun.
That's cool.
Yeah, I keep myself busy with scouting things when I'm not Star Warsing and Marveling it up.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Well, here at Star Wars Beyond the Films, we ask the tough questions. Questions that have bothered you for a long time, or simple ones that have perplexed you off and on. You ponder about Star Wars, and so do we. This episode, we are going to be taking a look at one of the coolest little stories ever. Star Wars Dark Forces, Soldier for the Empire by William C. Dietz, with illustrations by Dean Williams. So before we get too deep into spoiler territory, we'll give you a quick spoiler-free rundown. Just be sure to jump off at Tarkin's Arrogance. Well, you know how we do this. We're going to hit these quick little topics here. Was it good? Was it accessible? How was the art? It actually applies in this case. Could it be adopted into canon? And of course, we'll circle back around for that with the spoiler version for, you know, should it be? So let's go ahead and jump into that. Jim, what did you think, my man?
Well, first, give a little bit of background on it. Dark Forces, Soldier for the Empire is set up as a prequel to the original Dark Forces video game. Dark Forces, the video game, came out in February of 1995. This graphic novella came out in February of 1997. So we're looking at 2 years after the video game came out. But I believe, based on times of things, this the sequel to the original Dark Forces game, which was Jedi Knight Dark Forces 2, the weirdest naming of a sequel ever. It came out in, I think, October of 97. So I'm guessing, based on that this book was entirely a... Remember that game we released 2 years ago? Well, we're releasing a sequel, kind of remind you of the fact that the game actually exists.
Right.
So this is set up. It takes place roughly a year before the Battle of Yavin, and the game itself starts with them obtaining one of the sets of plans for the Death Star. And then the game continues on, which I had forgotten. I didn't even know that was in the game. I played the game a long time ago, and I didn't remember that part of the game. I just remember the game dealt a lot with the Dark Troopers, similar to like the Mandalorian, and most recent season of the Mandalorian, where you had the Moff Gideon and his Dark Trooper soldiers. That's where it was based on the Dark Forces video game. And so that's what I remember of the Dark Forces video game. And then reading this book, which we'll get into, you realize that there's a little bit of overlap between this book and the original game.
Mm-hmm. And while all that's going on, when this book came out, they also did a audio drama, which was adapting the story. I actually went through and listened to that. It's really good. Like the character dialogue that comes from the book, the way it's presented by the actual voice actors really works. Like you really get the banter between Kyle and his buddies, especially when they're in the Imperial Academy and stuff. Like when they have their downtime and stuff and they're calling him Rimmer and stuff like that, when you're listening to Nathan and Autumn or Odom, you know, basically bantering with him and stuff, it feels legitimate. It feels like these guys are the people, you know. It doesn't feel like you're just like hearing somebody acting it out. It feels legit.
Where did you get the audio drama? Because I looked on Audible and I could not find it there.
So ironically, it was Audible that I got it on. But it's a special. It was a trilogy. It is here. I'm just actually pulling it up. It is the Dark Forces, Star Wars Dark Forces, the Collector's Trilogy. It's all three of them in one. Because as we were going over this, you know, if for those that don't know, it comes in a hardcover, like an actual book with some illustrations. It comes in a comic trade paperback, which is basically exactly the same. It's just a soft cover. And then you've got these audiobooks, which are definitely different. Like the presenting of the events is different. Key point is like the beginning is way different in the audiobook than it is in the physical copy of the book. It's still telling the same story, but it's definitely the events are kind of more out of order and stuff. But yeah, that's where I got it. And it wasn't until we started looking at this that I realized I don't have the third book in physical. So now I was like, oh, it's not a big deal. I've got the audiobook. And then I'm like, oh, crud, it's not quite exactly the same. And then you try to hunt that book down, it's expensive. Ridiculously expensive.
They're all very expensive. I'm glad I have the original release hardcovers that I got probably like 20 years ago, and they're worth like $200-$300 now apparently.
Yeah, and see, I've got the first one hardcover, the second one I got in the comic soft cover. I never got the third one, so I'm like, this is gonna be rough.
Because yeah, I've
had some friends that have reached out and they're like, hey, I can lend it to you. I'm like, I might just, you know, take pictures and send it to me that way.
Or library maybe.
Right, that too. The upside is they're not long books. I mean, that's probably the upside for it, for sure.
Yeah, I was wondering because, like I said, I just tried looking on Audible again. I couldn't find it because I bought it. I got it on Audible like many, many years ago. And I listened to it and I could see I downloaded it separately because I knew it was because I didn't trust Audible, and apparently rightfully so.
Right,
because I'm looking at the Audible file. It's like a .aa file. I'm like, I have it backed up, but I don't know how to play it.
Something ain't right here. What the heck?
So yeah, that's what I was going to listen to it as well, but apparently that didn't happen because you were saying that the audio was significantly different when you started it, and so it was curious.
Yeah, it's presented basically at the battle where Kyle's dad's fate comes in. Because it starts out, he's telling the droid to record everything and stuff like that. Whereas the book, it starts out, he's still on the farm. Whereas the audiobook, it goes to him thinking about that. So like it still covers all that stuff, but it's done and presented in a different time frame, which was interesting.
Yeah. So my original thought, so I had suggested these books because having done the Jedi versus Sith, we see the Battle of Rusan. And you and I both know that the Battle of Rusan wraps up in this series. And so yeah. I'm like, why don't we continue that storyline to kind of see where we go? And so I'm like, I have the hardcovers. I know they're somewhere. I found them. And open up the first one. I'm like, I know they were always advertised as graphic novellas is always how they're put. And so I'm like, oh, it's going to be kind of a mixture between a story and a comic. It's not.
Right.
I don't think it is whatsoever. I know like people, a lot of people online I even saw, they're like, oh, it's like they got a lot of pictures in here. I'm like, yeah, but the picture, like it's kind of like a, it's a prose story, a short prose story, a novella. But the pictures are kind of like, have almost nothing to do with the story at times, it feel, or it's like they're not comic book pages at all. They're
right.
At best comic book covers that kind of give you.
Yeah. They got that chalk feeling where there's not a lot of detail to them.
Yeah. And like some of them, I'm like, this has nothing to do with the story at all. Others they're like, okay, this is interesting. Like the pictures, like they were pretty, but I didn't think they added anything.
I think the only one that really did for me was when they were on the Imperial Academy and they're doing the graduation ceremony, and they go about the, I mean, they really set up why this is like so dangerous. This marching, you know, they're just marching.
Oh yeah. That one I liked. You're right.
Yeah, it was like trying to figure out why this was so dangerous didn't quite make sense as I was reading it. And then I turned the page, and the next page shows like an aerial view of them doing the march, and it's kind of like they're doing two S turns down the road. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense in that regard. That illustration worked really well. But yeah, majority of them, I think, you know, working as cover art, especially when you think about how often covers for comics especially don't quite always match up with what's actually in the comic, I think, yeah, that's 100% dead on with what we got here.
Yeah, and the story itself, like, I don't know. It was weird. It felt like it jumped around a lot. It tried to cover a lot of ground, but not really cover a lot of ground, if you get what I'm meaning.
Right.
It's like they were trying to do too much, but not do it in that much detail. But then it would add really weird details. Like, that didn't need to be in the story. Like, you just wasted, like, three sentences on something that had nothing to do with anything.
There were a couple scenes like that that definitely felt like filler. And it reminded me of my own short story, because there were scenes where I added was it Sabic or Pazak? One of the two. I think it was Sabic I added. I did an entire Sabic game where I literally played the game out and then wrote about what happened in the game that I played for my character in the story. But there's a scene where we have something like that too, that it's like, in this book, the scene feels completely like, what was this have to do with anything? I'm kind of hoping that in the next two books, like, we'll circle back and that scene may have some development. Maybe it's a, you know, like the puffer pig on Rebels, where like eventually we come back and we're like, oh, the puffer pig had a point. But yeah, there were a couple of moments like that where I'm like, this kind of, when you only have seven chapters, right? Like,
yeah,
how much do you want to make story and how much do you want to make distraction?
Yeah, but like, there's the whole scene where Jan is going into essentially strip club, I believe.
yeah.
And she's trying to sit at the booth behind Kyle, but not be seen. And she's blocked by the waitress because, no, you can't sit in the booth by yourself. And she's like, oh, no, I got more people coming. And the waitress is like, fine, you can sit there. What was the point of like, literally there? And she's like, then she paid for a drink and got up. Like,
yeah,
that was the like, the most random tangent. Like, it was just like, what is the point of this entire interaction? Nothing. There's no
right,
point to it.
Right.
And I felt like that, yeah, like, kept popping up in the story. It was like a lot of like, okay. And then the entire last two chapters, and I'm like, this feels like you are writing a video game. Like, I could see, like, this feels like you played the video game and now you were writing the step-by-step instructions of the game and complaining about the game in the process. Because like, oh, Kyle's like, oh, I wish there weren't so many doors. They're all hiding the enemies behind them. Every time I open a door, there's an enemy. And then after I read the book, I looked up that you did have an entire section, these last two chapters overlapped with the video game. And I'm like, yeah, I could have told you that, like, just based on the writing of this book.
Right. Right. So was it any good? I feel like that's a double-bladed sword in this case, because, like, on one hand, I'm like, it's so short that it really struggles to give you depth in the short period of time that you're getting the story. Yet at the same time, I feel like there is such this fandom love for Kyle Katarn that it's just, like, hard for me to wrap my head around where that love came from outside of the video game, right? Like, I mean, I remember... For me, my favorite Kyle stories is when he came in the New Jedi Order and all those stories later where they brought him in as just, you know, a side character and stuff. And he would have points of view on things that would add to the conflict of what was going on in the story. Outside of that, I always felt like Kyle was a very underutilized character. You know, Nathan Butler, he wrote the Tales story 21 equals and opposites, where he got to put Kyle in fighting the Vong. So we got, you know, but we never got a lot of Kyle Katarn stories. And I always wished we would have gotten more of his background. I mean, in a lot of ways, him and Corran Horn, you know, feel so similar. And yet Kyle has just been so underutilized when it comes to the history of Legends in general.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see him and Corran, because you both have the father who has like this Jedi connection and that sort of like not really a Jedi, but have some sort of force attunement, and you have the Imperial connection. Yeah, that's all.
Mm-hmm. As for accessibility, I feel like this is one of those that it's a perfect Star Wars story. It kind of just drops you right in. You don't need to know a whole lot, especially for seven chapters. They really kind of give you the gist of where Kyle's at, where his family is at, and where his moral compass lands. You know, I mean, the title of the book flat out says he's a soldier for the Empire. And yet halfway through the book, we get a moment where Jan's like, we've got a new rebel, you know, and the way that that all plays out in the story, I liked how that plays out, even with the audio drama being slightly different. Like, that ramification and how it pushes Kyle to where he goes makes a lot of sense. And I liked the point of view that we get from Kyle when he's doing all the different things he's doing and stuff. Like, it gives us quite a bit of little insights that I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, I liked that aspect. You're right. It is one of those, since it's set up as a prequel to a video game, and it's set up like this is 90s Legends, and so you don't have much stories out there anyway. Mm-hmm. But this is when they're building up a lot of them, are in the mid 90s, and so they did set up really well to have a story just kind of start you off. You're not missing much to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think one of the hardest things is it's so nebulous in the aspect of where it's set that, like, if you weren't really paying attention, you may even be like, is this like closer to Return of the Jedi? I mean, this is for all intents and purposes, like an alternate version of Rogue One. And I like the way that even in the story, they establish, like, you know, you're going for a part of the plan. There are other parts of plans. We've got other missions out there. I always thought that was a cool take on it. And so that part, you know, I really appreciate that aspect of the story and going forward. You know, when you get to that aspect of could it be adopted into canon, like, man, this could have been Rogue One just as easily. Although I feel like, you know, if they'd have done that, it would have opened a huge can of worms as to, oh, the books are, you know, so I get why they didn't do that. And I'll come back around on that and touch on it more in depth when we get into the spoiler stuff. But, you know, the aspect that so much of the plans were divided up, you could easily adopt that into canon still and keep that going. You know, I think that would be something that could be cool to do. I feel like they still kept that aspect of the plans. Like, when Jan and them got it, they were really looking for the exhaust port flaw that her dad put into it. It wasn't like, you know, where the canon placements were and all that kind of stuff, which, when you think about it, it is the stuff that you need to know. You need to know, you know, if you're coming in from way out in space, you need to know which approach is the best approach when they've got the ship covered with turbo lasers. I mean, I that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I could see that. I guess you would need to do a little bit of hand waving with Rogue One going, yeah, it wasn't everything that was on the Death Star. We had this other team kind of looking into it. But it could work. I don't think it would work very well, and I think it would take away from the impact of Rogue One.
True.
And I feel like Rogue One did it better. Like this story. it's like, oh, you're breaking into this secure facility, and this basically a team of two is able to do it without much problem.
Right.
With one turncoat. And murders everybody in the building except for the turncoat.
Yeah, but we're going to stun you. That's not obvious at all.
Yeah, it's like,
how was the art? I think, you know, I think we're pretty much in the same boat on the art, that the art's kind of lackluster. There's nothing really that stands out. I'd say probably even the cover of the hardback is probably the best art, where we get a picture of Kyle. He's in front of an Imperial window. He's got his lightsaber lit up, which he doesn't have in this story. And then we got the Death Star in the background. I keep coming back to feeling like this book would have been so much better if they would have made it a big novel versus three small books. You know, each book should have been a part in a larger novel, and I think that there would have been more payout. I think that as a single book, just with seven chapters, and especially in light of the way it kind of ends, I feel like that doesn't work in this book's favor. It's a good setup, but as far as a complete story, it definitely feels like it's missing a few things.
Yeah, I 100% agree. The art, like I said before, is meh. I just realized when you were talking about it, looking at the hardcover, that he is holding a lightsaber that does not come into the story whatsoever, which is interesting to say the least, especially since this came out over half a year before the second video game and you only had the first video game. I don't remember if the first video game mentioned anything about force ability, like that he had any force abilities.
Right. And the book kind of hints at it at times. There's some bits of dialogue between him and Jarek that, like, if you were to imply it that he was talking the force, like, oh yeah, he's hinting at it. But it's really, it's so subtle that it's almost reaching. Key point is on page 53. He says, I'll be waiting, when he's talking about power and coming to power. And he's like, when you get to power, I'll be waiting. And you're like, what's that mean?
Well, that's what I think. I think this book actually laid it out much better, because I don't think we got it at all in the video game. And so I think that's what they were trying to set up with the second video game, especially since it's Jedi Knight, Dark Forces 2, is that he did have force abilities. You just missed it because we didn't know about it.
Right.
Because the second book in this, the second of these books, doesn't come out for a year after this book came out. It was March of 1998. So this was February of 97. So over a year later, you get the second part.
Wow. Man, and for such small books, it's just like, why? It's kind of almost funny that they would actually approve a series of books this small. But then again, I got to remind myself, this is kind of the beginning of that era of, you know, the EU really building on itself. You know, the ship Star of Empire that's used in this, I remember hearing about it a few times. So I was looking it up. I was like, when did that first come out? Because I had thought that it had already existed and they were referencing it. And it turns out it was created for this story and then later used again and again in a couple other stories. So I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, the licensing is also, I know, since this is licensed, or I assume this is licensed through the video game division, it's very different licensing than through the books. Like, it's a completely separate line, because I remember hearing about the X-Wing novels. Those were licensed through the video game division, And so those were under a separate contract than, say, like the Zahn novels, which were just straight adult novels.
Oh.
So I assume,
which actually makes sense as to the whole back and forth between Zahn and Stackpole and Alston as to, you know, why that would have been more significant than working together when you think about, you know, they're in different departments in a sense, like reaching out like, hey, I know we're not really working together, but we kind of are. Let's compile notes.
Yeah. And so that's probably why these are kind of, they're really weird. They're like under the Dark Horse banner, but they're not comics, but they're not novels. They're not like, it's like, what are, these are, I think they are stand out because they are so unique. I don't think we have anything else in the entire, what, thousands and thousands of books and comics that have come out, anything that even remotely comes close to what these are.
No, because the comic versions, like if you had them on your shelf, you would not think when you grabbed it that it's not a comic book, you know, filled with pages of illustrations. You open it up and it is the exact same story, book, and everything that the hardcover is. It's just in a trade paperback little tiny slit format, which is odd. I mean, it's just so weird when you think about that that's how they put it out in the softcover version.
Yeah, how it looks externally like a trade paperback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Weird. Well, Jim, I think unless you had anything else spoiler-free, I think we can jump into the meat of this potato.
not that I can think of.
We've analyzed their attack, sir, and there are spoilers. Should I have your ship standing by?
Evacuate? In our moment of triumph? I think you overestimate their chances.
Well, consider that your spoiler warning, Beyonders and Sentients of all ages. Because here we go, on another adventure, Beyond the Films. Well, you know, we talked about the marching performance. I thought that that was an interesting aspect of Kyle as well, because as they're preparing for this, I think there was like 36 deaths that have happened, and he does the math on it and figures out that the majority of those that have died during the ceremony are the ones that are like on the farthest edge because they're closest to the cliff. And it's just such a weird aspect of the training that you know, they would have them do something like this that would cause you to lose officers. And, you know, his friend, and I say friend loosely, Nathan, I can't remember Nathan's last name off the top of my head, but he was the pompous one. He was the one that was in the lead spot and doing the calls. And I liked how he was like, you know, I don't take chances. I've got a little marker. And then as they get closer to the marker, he's like, I can't find it. Maybe a droid picked it up or something. You're just like, uh-oh, this is going to get bad. And as they're doing the march, and Kyle can even feel like one third of his foot going over the edge. You're like, ooh, that's rough, bro. But I liked how something so similar as a marching to, you know, the graduation ceremony was turned into this life or death struggle for these poor guys.
That's how I did enjoy that part. It was, I think the way it was written, it was confusing at first as to what they are talking about.
Right.
And then you're right. The picture, the pictures in the book, that one was the one that you looked at and you go, oh, okay, now it makes sense. This is dumb. But it's dumb on their part, not dumb in the story part sort of thing. Like Donar, Nathan Donar, I think.
Yeah.
Because he comes back later.
Yes.
And
yeah, he has quite a bigger role overall than you would think.
Yeah, so the story is interesting. It's like you said, it's 7 chapters, and each chapter is kind of its own thing. Chapter 1 deals with his father. We aren't introduced to Kyle at all. It is just his father on a farm, and I believe he gets picked up by or mowed down. I think he gets picked up by the Empire. And everyone gets killed by Imperials that are dressed like rebels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the last we see of him. I think he just gets picked up. He's still alive at the end of the chapter.
Yeah.
And then we go on to Kyle in his training academy as he's about to graduate. And we also learn about some rebels. And so there, we have these 3 separate storylines. Father ends up dying off screen, and then the Rebels and Kyle kind of cross paths, mostly in relation to his father.
Right. Yeah, his father is definitely the branding iron that, that has him end up putting the Rebel crest on his chest in this sense. I did like how that marching and all that stuff kind of worked its way into the performance of the Empire and how the indoctrination worked. You know, you get insight into that when they're talking about how we paid more than 500,000 credits on training you to protect this empire. You're like, oh, okay. And like, that's a lot of money. Like, no pressure.
Don't walk off the edge.
Yeah. Yeah. And make sure to say halt right before they get to the, like, it was such a weird ceremony. But I mean, they mentioned, you know, it being tradition and all, but it's just like one of those, like, man, that's, yeah, I think that the way they described it worked because, you know, the guys that are doing it were very nervous and they were all like hoping Nathan knew what the heck he was doing. And Nathan being the pompous a-hole he is, I don't think there was a lot of faith that he was going to get them all through it.
I don't, what, he came across as a pompous a-hole to you? Because I felt he came across as, it was kind of with the nepotism, nepo baby sort of thing. So I guess I can see this, that is pompous, but
I'll give the pretense that I had already listened to the audiobook and the guy that did his voice rocked it. Like, and so I picked up a lot of that just from the way the guy presented the dialogue through his accent.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
I mean, that was definitely one of the best parts of the audio drama was the way that the dialogue came to life with the characters. You really felt it. So I liked that aspect. And then going back over it and then rereading it, it was like, you know, the audio drama took some liberties for sure. But when it came to the dialogue, a lot of it was word for word. So I thought that was kind of cool.
So would you recommend the audiobook over, like, obviously we do that later, but I'm thinking of it now.
Right.
Over reading it. Like, how long was the audiobook?
It was, well, let me see. I have it actually pulled up. It was 3 hours and 38 minutes. So, you know, I mean, honestly, I think, especially in light of how expensive it is, if you could find the audiobook or a copy of it out there, it's definitely, you get in the gist of the story. It's not exactly happening in the same, you know, way. There are a couple things that definitely happen differently, especially with the Moldy Crow. When he gets that ship in the audiobook, it's assigned to him. In the actual book, he gets to pick amongst the different ships, little things like that. But outside of that, I think you get a lot more out of the way the character dialogue is presented to you. Because like I said, like the one guy just felt like he was just a pompous a-hole, man. Like, hey, Rimmer, you know, like he was just constantly like jabbing at Kyle every time, kind of always making Kyle realize that, hey, you didn't grow up in the core worlds. You know, you're cast off, man. Like you're here because we just need fodder, you know, like, and of course, you know, his position, he's the one that's doing all the yelling out of the orders and stuff. He's in a position because of his family, a place where he couldn't possibly fall off. Like everything about him just seemed pompous.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was wondering, because like reading the book, I'd say probably took me about 3.5 hours. Like obviously I did it over several days, but I think accumulated, that sounds about how long I read it. And so it's almost on par listening to the audiobook. And like we said before, there's so much in this book that is not needed. And it's not like it's an entire chapter out of the 7. It's like a sentence out of a paragraph, but it's one of those that you read the paragraph and you go, that sentence was pointless in the paragraph. And it's not like, you get that a lot of times where you'll read a book and like the sentence won't have any impact, but it won't pull you out. Like some of those, like literally I'm like, why was this? Like they made such a point out of it. They called attention to it and it had nothing to do with anything. It just,
see,
it,
for me, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it just drove me bonkers. Like, that's it, little things like that.
For me, it was the Lando. when Lando made appearance for the Sabacc game on the Star of the Empire, I was just like, okay, where are we going with this? Like, I was excited. I was like, oh, Lando shows up.
I completely forgot he was even in the book.
Exactly. I'm like, where is this? What is this? You know, like, I'm trying to remember, like, when I read the first one, and I'm like, did he come back later? Like, you know, like, what was the point of Lando being there aside from, oh, hey, look, here's one of the core characters from the films. Just that was odd. And then, like I said, when I remembered seeing the name Star of the Empire, and I was getting it confused with a different ship, you know, because so when I looked it up, like I said, it was its first appearance was this story. It came up again in Rebel Dawn, Galaxy of Fear, the Doomsday ship, and then also in Rebel Agent. But yeah, I was just like, man, what's the other ship? There was another ship that was like this one that was, you know, a famous starliner that went back, kind of like the one that they've got in the High Republic, the Halcyon.
The Halcyon, yeah.
You know, it was a lot like that one, and I can't for the life of me think of what the name of that other ship was, but I thought it was this one. And then I looked in there, and I was like, oh, yeah. Because I forget, you know, with the history of Legends in the EU and how long it was, that, yeah, this was a Bedrock-level story. It was still coming out in that era when, you know, they were just starting to bridge gaps between stories, tie things together. Case in point, one of the things I didn't even realize until I was rereading it today was the tie-in to Tales of the Jedi. There was a small little line on page 85 as they're attempting to flee from the Star of Empire. Kyle hadn't preset their coordinates into the nav computer yet. Jan says, don't worry, the nav computer will detect whatever beacons happen to be in the area. If that fails, run star scans until we find a match. These are the same beacons that are mentioned in the Tales of the Jedi stories. I had no clue about that. And to think about the fact that this is set during the time frame it is and such a gap, you know, a couple hundred thousand, or not hundred, but a hundred or so, a couple thousand years difference between the Tales of the Jedi stories and now, and to know that those beacons are still in use. I never even thought about that. There are a few stories that mention the beacons in this time frame, and yet this one was one of the early ones, and it was doing it, and I miss that all those times.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but you're right. I do remember them talking about the beacons. Unlike Lando, who came into the story and left the story, had a whole card game of the story, and it makes you feel like there is another story, and this is where they touched, sort of thing. Like,
right?
Lando was in his own story from something else, and he happened to impact this story. And that was, like, that's where
and
they
I kept
came
thinking,
across. Like, it was...
What was it? The Dark Fleet? The Catan ships or whatever they were? And they went on a similar thing where him and Han went onto one of those other ships like that. And they played a set. Because that's what I kept thinking was, like, is this going to tie in? Are we going to see Han? Like, no. But none of that.
No. Just Lando for Lando's sake is really what it was.
Yep.
And they did that a lot in Legends. They do that a lot now. I shouldn't specify Legends. Is they'll just pull in characters for the sake of pulling in characters.
Yeah. I did like it. Another small little toss away thing was Kyle didn't go and play Sabacc because he's a self-admitted sore loser. I'm like, okay, I'm down. I get it. I don't play Monopoly with my wife for the same reason.
Throw
some
one
people
thimble,
take things a
nobody
little
wants
hard.
To play Monopoly anymore.
that's right, man. You don't buy Boardwalk on the first round, that's for sure.
All right, but you brought up the ship that we get to at the end, the Moldy Crow. And the Moldy Crow stands out to me because as I was reading this and we're coming to the ship thing, and I'm like, wait a second. Is this like where the Moldy Crow comes in? Because I couldn't remember the ship that was in this story. But I remembered as I'm going along, I'm like, oh, wait, because I love the name the Moldy Crow. I think that name is absolutely fantastic. And you said before we started recording that there's a little more behind the name of the ship than I even knew.
Yeah. So when I first got into the online side of Star Wars, it was back with the message boards. They had hyperspace. If you were a hyperspace member, you had a special name. That's how I met Nathan, in fact. Nathan was a purple name, which meant he was a VIP because he got to write the tales equal and opposite story with Kyle and the Vong. So, you know, I was like, oh, there's a fan that made it. But they had all these different hyperspace things that they would provide for the fans and stuff to give you a chance to do stuff. And one of them was the What's the Story? And it was for the Moldy Crow. And, you know, it was like basically just here's a picture of the ship. Give us a backstory. Best one wins. I can't remember who won. I just remember that happening and that them tying that in and that becoming Kyle's ship. And that this is the story that that ship is actually first introduced. So I thought that was always cool.
Yeah, because they did. I know they for a fact they did a similar thing for Jason Solo's Darth name.
Oh, yeah, when he was Cadus.
Because I had actually submitted to that one. I didn't know that this was something else before that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to think of how, because I want to say they did it about 8 different times of those different little What's the Story things. Usually it was like a character or a ship, like almost every single time.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up. It's not, does not come up easily, trying to find back in the early 90s or late 90s stuff.
Right. Well, and then all the background on it, when you go into the Legends tab, because it's got the canon tab, because they reused it in canon again. But yeah, when you get down to the behind the scenes, nothing about the contest. It's like, I really thought at the time, like I remember there being a tie to William Devereaux. You know, one of our fellow admins at StarWarsReport.com and one of the hosts of Ion Cannon. I thought William had wrote it, but then I asked him about it, and he was the one that was like, no, it was from the backstory thing. And I was like, oh, okay, because I was like, okay, if I'm jogging William's memory, he would be like, yeah, I remember I wrote it, but no, he didn't. So I'm like, well, then who the heck did it? Because I remember talking to William about it. And that was where he, you know, he pointed me back to it was the What's the Story. But yeah, and I miss the message boards and all that stuff that StarWars.com used to do. Like that was, I don't know. It really felt like a community back then.
I was on them a little bit. Yeah. It's people were a lot nicer and it was a lot smaller.
Mm-hmm. So what's the story? The article is about a hyperspace feature. It's an exclusive feature of the Star Wars fan club website, Star Wars Hyperspace. It gave Hyperspace members a chance to leave their mark on the Star Wars expanded universe by allowing them to provide the backstory for certain aspects of the saga, usually obscure background characters or vehicles from the film. Winning entries became official Star Wars lore, published in the databank and added to the Holocron Continuity Database. This feature was launched June 24th. Of 2005, and it was concluded January 4th, 2008. It was first hinted at by Pablo Hidalgo on Lucas Online. The feature began with the backstory of Tanan Praj, a character from Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
Timing doesn't work out.
Yeah, that's weird, huh?
Because a Dusty Duck came up, and I'm wondering if that's...
Maybe that's what it was. I could have swore that it was this one. But then again, the Dusty Duck and the Moldy Crow do sound similar.
Yeah, the Dusty Duck was a ship from Episode 1 that they named in the background.
Oh, maybe that's it. Maybe I was completely wrong. We're just bringing up a really fun little trivia piece of Star Wars history. Yeah, as I'm going through them all, there's actually quite a few of them here. Like, easily over 50. Yeah, there's the Dusty Duck. I see it. Wow, there's quite a few. Rolo Droid. Well, I stand corrected. Yeah, looks like Moldy Crow was never in it. It was the Dusty Duck. Okay, as we were. I guess in the end, it was just a, you know, a ship that got used later because we see it show up in a couple other things. Okay.
Okay, then.
All right.
We've been fact-checked in real time.
Yeah. Ha-ha. All right. So... jumping back in, let's see.
Like, I don't have, like, the story's not that long. And I feel like there's not much, since the chapters almost feel like completely separate stories, I don't have much on this one. Like, it's a weird tangent in the Star Wars universe, it feels like, almost. Like, despite the
fact... these could have easily been insider stories, you know?
Yes, definitely. Like, it could have been... Like, they're not long, the chapters by themselves. And honestly, I don't think that they're fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's... I don't like to be the negative Nelly, but that's not my favorite.
that is one thing, like, because of the nature of how short it is, you think about, like, okay, each chapter, you could have had 7 short stories in Insider, you know, or you could have just taken and made this like a start of a bigger book, you know, take a book that was in this time frame and do like what they did with Recovery and Star by Star, where they stuck that little short story at the beginning of the paperback.
Or the
Boba Fett story that they stuck into the New Jedi Order.
Yeah, I think from what I gathered, trying to figure out what these stories were, this one and the next two, they are retellings of the 2 video games, I believe. Like this one, mm-hmm. where while it is touted as the prequel of Dark Forces, the video game, it does overlap in the last 2 chapters. And so I think... you get that part, and then the next book theoretically would cover the Dark Forces video game and then part of the Dark Forces 2. And then the last book, I think, wraps up Dark Forces 2.
Yeah, because they refer to it as a bridge between them. But, yeah, there's definitely some overlap there, you know, the base of your bridge.
Yeah, I don't think they can – like, I don't think they would skip the story of the video game.
You would hope not.
You would hope not, because not everybody's going to play the video game, especially back then. I think video game playing is more prominent now,
right,
where it's less like Dark Forces was, I think, exclusively a PC game at the time. Well, they just remade it actually recently, and you could play it on all the consoles. I think it was released back in February. But at the time, only being a PC game, you're limiting your reach. And so to tell a story, you can't assume that they played the game.
Yeah, right. And it wasn't like YouTube videos back then where you could watch somebody playing it either.
No. Like nowadays, even with like the Jedi games... Fallen Order. Yeah, Fallen Order and Survivor.
Jedi Survivor.
They almost assume that you played the games to get the story beats. Or at least seen, again, YouTube videos like you were mentioning.
Right. You know, and the other thing, too, is so Kyle gets the Medal of Valor for a mission that he was doing. It was kind of like a test mission. It was a legitimate mission to a rebel base on an asteroid. And in that's where he first runs into Jan, and he's more reluctant to, you know, just kill them all. And later, when he sees her again, that's when he wants to go and talk to her about his father, because he's still confused as to why, with his father being a rebel sympathizer, why would the rebels kill him during a raid, you know? And so we get that aspect of her telling him and stuff and him finding that out. And it was kind of cool because... it also gives importance to the protocol droids, right? Because there's a line in there. They go, many of these correspondents have companions like AC here who are equipped to capture, store, edit whatever they witness. They're getting the truth out to the public. This adds a layer of why there are so many protocol droids about the rebellion, which I thought was cool because I never really thought about it like that. Like, they're all recording what's going on so the Empire can't go, that's not true. Fake news. Yeah. You know? You're like, oh, okay. And so... like the AC aspect, and then when you know, he sees Kyle's uniform, he starts to go into his detonation mode, which plays up later.
That did come
because
back.
You know, it's literally.
I was very surprised that came back.
Right, and see, and I think that's also where I felt that there was an implied pompousness to Nathan, because in the end it was Nathan leaning over the droid and it saw his uniform and blew up and killed all of them. I was like, you got what you deserve. He wasn't really that big of a D-bag, but again, the guy that played him did it to a T. You're like, just had a voice. You want to kind of slap the guy.
That's it. Like I said, that's interesting, because I didn't get that impression from him. Like, I got an impression that he was annoying, but not that, like mostly that he couldn't make friends. And so he tried to make friends with Kyle, and Kyle wasn't having any of it.
Right. We also get a seed to the later relationship that we will see develop eventually throughout the story of Legends between Kyle and Jan, when she is in the library before they meet up and she's in like a VR room dancing. So he sees an aspect of her and he's like, this is very important to her. And along those lines, one of the funniest things that really drew me out of it was there towards the very end when we find out that Kyle has an email address. That he, it was page 96. He gets an email and I'm like, I wonder what Kyle's email address is. Like, I was like, oh my God, they send emails. Like, I don't know. That just so threw me out right up there with, there was one part where she was saying something. She's like, what in the heck or something like that, when it should have been like a hell. And I was just like, oh, that's so funny. The self-censoring that they're doing right now.
They said hell in Empire Strikes Back. It's not like this is the new territory too. I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they did set up some stuff in here that's, wasn't throwaway, but it was like it clearly didn't like play out yet. The Dark Jedi, what's his name? I forget his name.
Jarek,
yes. They also mentioned a Jedi friend of his father's, who the name I recognize, so I know he comes back. Rome.
Yeah, Ron or something like that. Yeah.
And I wonder, this I don't know, but I assume he has to come back, was the best friend Odom, or Autumn.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was an Odom, like an Adam, but they just owed him out.
Yeah. And so that's, I'm like, he has to come back in the next two, or one, or whatever. Because he was the friend that was friends in military school, but ended up being his backdoor in to get the plans. And
well, he was his roommate.
Yeah, that's right. His roommate.
Yeah, Odom was his roommate.
Roommate and best friend. And he's like, Kyle's like, oh yeah, I need to get into the vault to steal the plans. And Autumn's like, sure, whatever, come on in. Murder everybody else that's here. That's fine.
it's like, go up this way. It'll probably be easier.
Yeah, it's like one of those, like, they skipped over that conversation, but that's a conversation that you're like, where did how did this turn out that he's like fine with you coming in and murdering everybody?
Right. Well, and there was even a moment too where he's on the ground and he's thinking about that too. You're like, oh, like this, you know, like you're like, okay, they definitely were friends. He helped him, but this could be a moment that makes him end up resenting Kyle later, depending on how he internally processes what he's done. You know, like if he's okay with it, there's not a problem. But if he starts thinking more and more about it and thinking, you know, Kyle's bad for forcing him in that way, you could see kind of the similar divide that we see with Luke and not Biggs, but the Suntner character that was in the comics. I can't remember how that plot went out, but it was similar to that. And that part where Jan, where she says, heck, it was when she was showing him how his dad, Morgan, died on the Solus moon. She's like, Kyle, there's no way in heck that I should show you this. I'm like, oh my gosh.
No, there is no way in heck.
And then Nathan, for all his pretentiousness, though, he was friend enough to Kyle to send him an anonymous letter to avoid Jan and the crew when they were on the Star of the Empire, when the Empire's on to all of them. So I thought that was a kind of a cool moment. And of course, Kyle didn't at all care about, you know, betraying Nathan. And he's just like, get out of here, go fast, and, you know, get the heck out. I like that aspect. I feel like there's a lot more here that they could have come back in with another story and really fleshed it out and gave us more of Kyle's time frame. You know, because like Kyle was a key player throughout a lot of Legends stuff, and yet there is a big gap between this kind of stuff and then later, you know, when Nathan brings him in Equals and Opposites and him showing up in the New Jedi Order, it's like, well, what was he doing? Like there could have been a lot more stories that we could have got of Kyle's days between then and there.
Yeah, I should point out that when you're calling Nathan pretentious, it's not Nathan Butler that you're calling pretentious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Although that may be true. I'm not saying it's not. I'm not saying it is. I'm just...
You know, another one that was almost like a why is he here is Slinder, or cider.
No, the bounty hunter.
I hated
the fact that they went with the trope, and they literally stated the trope that every one of the species is the same, and so all rodents are bounty hunters. And he even says, "Oh, most of my species are bounty hunters." I'm like, "Oh, shut up!"
And they all stink.
Yeah.
Stinky bounty hunters. I did like that Roscoe was calling Kyle Admiral. Like every time he was like, "Who put you in charge, Emperor? Come on, Admiral." They could have like really done more with Jan's group, I feel like. But that's where it comes down to. I wonder where the licensing came in, because like I feel like it's almost like they really weren't allowed to tell a big story.
Yeah.
Like I really feel like had they were going to tell a bigger story, that this would have been a much bigger novel than instead of three little tiny stories that are about seven chapters each. You
know? So I feel it's like looking at the page count, you're looking at like 126 pages, 27 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I think like this one story could have been fleshed out so much more. I'm not even joking. That last chapter or the last two chapters where they're recounting the video game, it was such just beat for beat video game.
Yeah, and it went quick too.
Yeah, and it was like he went in one room, he opened the door, he went in another room, he opened the door, and he couldn't get into the one room, so we needed the key, so we need to go back and get the key. And and Odom even said that he would need the key to get in there, and he tried to get in and it didn't work, and so he had to go get the key. Like had to be the bright flashy key. I'm like, of course it had to be the bright flashy key, because that's what the video game Darley did. Like I could tell you exactly what the video game looked like based on the story. That's not a good thing.
Right. It was funny too, like when he sees the tape and he sees his dad died, and he, you know, he's like, "I'm ready to join." Jan's like, "Well, I can't recruit you, but I know somebody." And then it was like, "We're gonna take you to the top." Like, you know, we got all these people that will vet rebels and stuff, but we're gonna take you, a guy who right now is still an Imperial Stormtrooper, we're gonna take you into the same room with Mon Mothma herself.
And like, yeah. And
that was like a big, like, I'm like, Kraken is freaking out. He's like, "Security breach. Come on, guys."
So even that, like, how many rebels were former Imperials? Probably most of them, because that's where you have the military training from. And so it's like, this is like one, you don't want this new person in front of your top brass, but two, you do want to vet them through the lower ranks and kind of like go, "Yeah, that's kind of like most of us." And then like immediately when he's talking to another Imperial, they're like, "Oh, we got to murder him."
Well, and she sends Jan to follow him in case he might turn. And I'm kind of like, I feel like on Mothma's part that was a mistake. She should have sent Jan with him. Because when he sees her later, it definitely, like, I know if I was in Kyle's position and I was sent on a mission and then all of a sudden the person that helped bring me in is following me, I would definitely feel like there's a target on my back. Versus being sent with her and not knowing that I had a target on my back, thinking she's just working with me, but having her just show up randomly on the mission I'm on definitely screams, "I'm not trusted."
Yeah. So, all right. I think that's all I got. Do you have anything else you wanted to bring up?
Well, let's see. Well, keeping in the guise of Mon, I did like that she immediately knew who Odin was and knew that was part of why she couldn't trust him, because he didn't say anything about it. So that was kind of an interesting appearance of how that kind of went about.
Yeah, I liked that. Did tell you that they had good information people.
And of course, you know, when we get to, you know, the actual base and he talks to Odom, he pulls Odom in like immediately. And like I said, that as the story goes out, you know, you could see Odom get very resentful for how quickly Kyle turned his back on all of them and kind of left him there and left him to deal with everything. Like, I feel like that's a good place for some serious drama. Whether they capitalized on it, that's a different story. But when you get to like a page 120, Kyle's fighting off the stormtroopers, and we start seeing him using the Force more and more. I mean, like, they're literally, it's more than just a Spidey sense that we see earlier where he, like, he feels something. Like, no, he is literally, like, spinning around and using the Force to kind of fuel his counterattacks. And I thought that was kind of a cool little thing that they were doing.
Yeah, they did mention, like, he's like, oh, he would normally ignore when he felt like kind of a tug on his, like, attention, basically. Mm-hmm. And he's like, now he used it.
Right. And, of course, you know, everything comes to such a quick head. You know, when he enters the courtyard in the landing bay, he just sees the mass of stormtroopers. The Moldy Crow ain't there. And he's planning on destroying the plans. And that's just when Jan comes in to save the day. You know, he literally jumps in, and that's it. It's kind of a jarring ending, like, because you're just running along in a clip, and then just boom, it's over. And it's not even like a satisfactory, it's over, like, you know, they got what they need, they're going to go back. It's just like he gets in the ship and they fly off. Like, it's literally like, boom, it's like one of those where you're watching the movie and all of a sudden credits show and you're like, wait, what? Is there an ending here?
Well, it's like, it's because, like, looking it up, this is the opening scene of the video game. This is how you play the video game. It is nothing. It is not the story of the video game. It's the get you adjusted to the controls part of the game.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense then. Okay. Interesting. Well, so let's do our follow-up questions. You know, should it be brought into canon? What would you need to change to adopt it into canon? And what would you rate it? Should it be brought into canon? Gosh, I'm conflicted on this one, because a part of me, I would love to see a lot of elements and strong things from Legends make its way over. And in that regard, I feel like, yeah, it should. But like you even said, Rogue One did such a great job that you really don't need this. I almost feel like this could even work better if you're going to bring it into canon. Don't make it Death Star 1, make it Death Star 2, and have Kyle running a secondary mission alongside the Bothans.
Yeah.
Like, that might even work better.
The way it's worded in this book, it almost feels like they got that mixed up, because
I thought that at times too.
Mon Mothma mentions a lot of people died to get this information, sort of thing. And I'm like, that's not this Death Star, lady. That's the next one.
Right? Exactly. What would be needed to change? I like I said, it's either you put it in the same spot and you do what they planned originally by, you know, it's one more aspect. Maybe this was the outer defense ring to get close enough to do what Jin and them find out. I don't know. Or you move it to Return of the Jedi and make it the second Death Star. I think that something like that would be an easy change to be able to adopt it. But again, I have a hard time saying it should be. The only thing that makes me feel like it should be is nostalgia. And I don't feel like adding things to stories just for nostalgia's sake are going to turn out well. So I kind of, for the first time, as much as I want it, I kind of feel like maybe it shouldn't. Or at least definitely not in the same spot. Like, you know, retool it enough that you have changed it significantly. I really feel like Death Star 2 would be a better place for this story in canon now.
Yeah, I think leaving out those chapters altogether, I don't think it's needed. I don't think it's warranted in this story. And if you were going to, I would say definitely it needs to be rewritten. But it can go along with the stuff we see in Dark Forces. If you forget about the Death Star plans, all the Dark Trooper stuff, that stuff was pretty cool. That stuff actually kind of comes to play in canon now. So we can use this, readjust the time frame to be around the Mandalorian. And so, like, that sort of thing, to have it all try to tie into the Mandalorian myth with Moff Gideon and the Dark Trooper stuff and kind of go from there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that would be cool. No, I could dig that. What would we rate it? Dude, I'm going to be brutal on this one. I love Kyle, but I'm going to give this one a 3. I feel like this story would have just been much better served if they would have went full in and made it a full-size novel. I feel like there's a lot of good bones here with this, that if you were to flesh some more things out, give a little more background to, even his buddies, you know, Odom and Nathan, like, if you'd have, you know, we got some background on both of them, but I really feel like we could have maybe even added to the depth of, you know, like Odom, like, is he going to betray Kyle? You know, like if we'd have given him some more backstory where we're like, well, you know, maybe he's not the friend we think he is. Because we kind of get that with Nathan's character, because at that one point he sends Kyle the message going, don't be around that girl. You know, like, even though he is a jerk, he's still clearly Kyle's friend enough to warn him. And so, like, I think that they could have played with that more if they would have done something like that, for sure. But yeah, the shortness of the story, I really feel like that's the biggest detriment to giving this book a higher rating. Like, it just wasn't really enough there to draw you in. If you hadn't played the video games, I feel like that's the necessary components to really get the most out of the story.
Yeah, I think what you were bringing up with the friends, how having a more of a backstory, and it reminded me, while I was reading the book, it reminded me of Lost Stars, where you have a group of Imperials, and some people go to the Rebellion, some people stay in the Imperials, but you know all this group of friends' backstory so well that you like to see their interactions after the time that they parted company.
Right.
You don't get that here. You do not get the depth of these characters. Like, it's like very superficial. And so I 100% agree with you. Like, normally my rating, how I rate, go over this again. I started a 7. I go up or down from a 7. 7 being your C average. And if I like it, I can go up. If I don't like it, it goes down. If I kind of feel like I didn't feel either way, it'll kind of stay at a 7. I initially had a 5, and I think it went down from there after our discussion of, like, wow, I really didn't like this story. So I think I'm at a 4. I'm not going to give it a 3, because there's only a few stories I've given a 3 or lower, and I really hated them. I don't think I really hate this story. I just think it's not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the best thing for the story is Kyle himself.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they don't even really give you a reason why.
Yeah, I think it's... You're right. I think it has good bones. It has a lot of potential. It's like a house that you're looking... I literally saw a house pop up on Zillow nearby here. And it started off with, this house has a lot of potential. And you look at the pictures and you're like, this is garbage. and it's like, that's basically what I feel here. It has a lot of potential.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully when we get to the next two stories that the potential continues to grow.
Hopefully I don't regret my decision to see if you wanted to do these.
Well, only time will tell. Now, that about wraps up this episode of Star Wars Beyond the Films. We'd like to thank you once again for hanging around with us as we ponder on sharing our fandom. Remember, you can always listen to our episodes streaming online on the Star Wars Report website, Second Airborne Division of Podcasts, at www.starwarsreport.com. Episodes are also available on Stitcher as well as Spotify and even on iTunes. And as always, we encourage you to leave us a iTunes review while you're at it. You can also find links to our show on both our Twitter and Facebook pages at SW Beyond Films, or just type in Stars Beyond the Films in your search bar. No matter how you get there, though, be sure to like our Facebook page. It's one of the best ways to interact with us. It's our own home one, if you will. Not only can you post comments to us about the show, we love interacting with you fellow fans. So if you have any Star Wars questions, EU questions, or if you want to just say, hey, Mark, you're wrong about that ship, just fire off and send us an email. You can email us directly at swbeyondfilms@starwarsfanworks.com. Now, lastly, before we go, we want to give you a quick mention of our sponsors, Audible. If you go to www.audibletrial.com/starwarsreport, you get a free trial run of Audible to see what they're all about. Our sponsors have more than 100,000 titles. You can explore the Star Wars universe, the expanded universe, or any other genre without risk of being stuck with a book you flat out hate, because all Audible members can exchange any book within 12 months, that's 1 year, with no questions asked. So in this digital age, if you're thinking of making the switch from the page to the audiobook, or if you're just trying to find the collection of this, Audible just might be right for you. So once again, for Star Wars Beyond the Films, this is Ben, Mark, and Whistler.
And Jim.
Saying thanks for listening, and may the Force be with you.
Don't quote us the odds. that Nathan Butler is also a pompous ass.
We love you, Nate!
Yeah, I was thinking about that when I was reading all the Nathan things. I'm like, I wonder if Nathan really got a kick out of that. Like, I don't see my name showing up in a lot of stories in Star Wars. So, like, anytime there's anybody close, I'm like, Merrick? Close enough.
Crux.
Yeah, Crux.